belong, become, believe. You're listening to Grace Church of Northwest Arkansas podcast. The message for May 5th, 2024 is called Decluttering. The speaker is John Ray and the location is Central United Methodist Church Chapel in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Well, hey everybody. How is everybody? So those of you listening on the podcast, my name is John Ray. Welcome to Grace Church. We are really glad you're here. So the question we were talking about is, where is your clutter? Normally, it looks something like this, but not this well organized, because my wife is an incredible organizer. She's actually banded all these together. But how many of you have a basket or a drawer in your house just full of old cords? Chargers, cords, stuff, right? And like garage, and maybe a whole box. And there's just something about it that we can't throw it away. Even though it may be to a flip phone from when George Bush was president, we can't unclutter and throw those things away. Well, while that might just be a minor inconvenience or an ongoing annoyance in our lives, it illustrates a propensity we have of not being able to let go of the things that used to work in the past, but no longer are sufficient for now. Now, we've been studying this book of Hebrews, and we've been looking at it, and we've seen the author is encouraging the people not to go back to the old ways, not to go rummaging through the junk drawer, if you will, not to go rummaging through and trying to pull the cords out and use the things that gave power before. She's saying, no, we have something better than that. So let's look at the text. We're in chapter 10. We're not going to read all of chapter 10, but we're going to read part of it, and then talk about if we can see if this makes sense. So starting with verse 1. For the law possesses a shadow of the good things to come, but not the reality itself. It is therefore completely unable, by the same sacrifice offered continually, year after year, to perfect those who come to worship. For otherwise they would not have ceased to be offered, since the worshipers would have been purified once and for all and have no further consciousness of sin. But in those sacrifices there is a reminder of sins year after year. For it is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sin. So when he came into the world, he said, sacrifices and offering you did not desire, but a body you prepared for me. Whole burnt offerings and sin offerings you took no delight in. Then I said, Here I am. I have come. It is written of me in the scroll of the book, to do your will, O God. So when he says above, sacrifices and offerings and whole burnt offerings and sin offerings you did not desire, nor did not take delight in them, which are offered according to the law, then he says, here I am, I have come to do your will. He does away with the first to establish the second. By his will we have been made holy through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once and for all. Y'all, this is revolutionary. This is why we cannot pick and choose verses throughout the Bible without seeing how they fit in the whole panorama. This doctrine, if you will, this theology, supersedes everything that was done in the Old Testament. Those things were there, they're important, but they were pointing. The author makes clear here, she says they were pointing us towards something greater. And now that greater thing is here, we no longer need those things. We remember them with reverence. We remember what they pointed us to, but we can clean that drawer out. We don't have to keep doing those things with that. You would think that in one way that would be a very freeing thing. Oh my gosh, we don't have to do this. We don't have to go and offer these ritual sacrifices and the cleansing and the whole deal. But there's something about our human nature that won't let us let go of that. And we're going to talk about that in a sec. But in case we miss the point, going down to verse 16, the author picks it up again and says, "This is the covenant that I will establish with them after those days, says the Lord. I will put my law in their hearts and I will inscribe them on their minds." We talked about this last week, having a new heart, having that law written in our heart. Then he says, "Their sins and lawless deeds I will remember no longer." There is a legal imputation here, a paid in full stamp, if you will, that says it's done. We move on from those things. God is saying, "I'm no longer concerned with those things. I'm not mad about those things. Those things are not keeping you from me in any way." Do we still take sin seriously? Yes, we're going to talk about that. But the guilt that we feel and the need that we've felt to somehow offer a sacrifice to re-enter that relationship, that's done with. It's gone with that. Now it goes on, and I encourage you to read the whole chapter because there's implication here. But the big idea that I want us to see in the time that we have this afternoon is that living into this new heart that we talked about last week and that the author again references here isn't always easy. It takes practice and encouragement. And having a new heart can also be very disoriented. And what happens when we get disoriented? We look for something familiar. We look for something we know. We look for something that we've done before that's worked in the past. And we try to go back to those things. But to receive the new thing, we can't go back to the past. Laura, you know, in the announcement, she was talking about how this summer we're going to really take a deep dive, 11 weeks. We're going to look into various emotions. We're going to look at practices that we have that actually encourage the healthy expression of those things. Moralistic fundamentalist Christianity has a rap, an earned rap, for suppressing emotions, for telling you not to feel a certain way or do that. We're going to look at the fullness of these emotions and how they are given to us and what they can teach us about ourselves, about God and others. One of those is the feeling of guilt and shame. Look, we all feel guilty at times. We all experience shame. The question is, what do we do with it? Do we go back to the old way? And this is for us. Now I'm talking about for us. I'm not talking about in the context of the book. That's a good jumping off point. But I'm talking about for us. So when I feel guilt, when I feel shame, do I go back to the old way of dealing with it? And the old way is, in a way, illustrated in the Old Testament of either scapegoating, which is I'm going to put my sins onto something else. That's what the sacrificial system did. It's like I'm going to take my guilt, I'm going to put it on this sheep, I'm going to put it on this bird, I'm going to put it on this bull, and I'm going to kill it. I'm going to sacrifice it as a way of de-sinning myself, of transferring that off of me, and then have it dealt with. Or we sacrifice ourselves. We would do the incredible acts of penance. We feel like we disqualify ourselves so often with this. We still do these things, y'all. In the Old Testament, they would take people and they would separate them. They would make them go out in the wilderness by themselves. They would cut them off from the community and with certain sins. I would suggest to you that human beings do that all the time and in a way always have. We either scapegoat, we make somebody else responsible for the bad thing. It's called projection. the thing that we're guilty of, that we feel bad about. We can't handle it. We don't know what to do with it, so we make someone else the enemy. We other. We project that guilt. We project that shame onto other people. Just like Israel did with the sacrifices of the animals. We do it most often with people, or types of people, or groups of people. We'll make a certain class of people the enemy, the unclean ones. Or we will sacrifice ourselves. We'll self-sabotage. We'll disqualify ourselves. We'll say, well, I messed up, so I can't do it. I can't be part of this anymore. I can't show my face there anymore. I can't. And we separate ourselves, just like the people in the Old Testament were sent away from the community, except we self-exile. We do that ourselves. Those are the old ways of doing. That's the clutter. Those are the old things. When Jesus came, and Jesus says, I make this new covenant, listen, we've got to stop that stuff. The author, we don't have time to talk about it, but it's fascinating. The author says, look, I never really wanted you to do that, which is an indication of how we reconcile, in many ways, the God of the Old Testament that seems like so different from Jesus. We start to see that play out. People are starting to understand, hey, maybe Jesus did that more for us than for God. Like, maybe God did that more for us as a way of teaching us than something that was needed or necessary. But we don't have time to talk about that. But we just need to know that we can't keep doing that. That's the old way. The old way is to scapegoat, self-sacrifice. So what do we do then? Because we still feel guilt, right? We still feel shame. We still mess up. Bad things are still done to us and by us. So what's the new way? What do? There's a key verse that comes later that says, because of this, we cannot shrink back from moving forward. We cannot shrink back from living into the new heart. Look, we don't get it all at once. It takes encouragement. It takes practice to live into this new way of living. We're gonna mess up. We can't give up, though. We can't stop trying. We can't stop moving towards that. We can't scapegoat others. We can't self-sacrifice. We have to keep moving forward, even when we blow it, even when we mess up, even though when we miss the mark, even though when we forget and come back, we start again. We keep moving forward. A lot of religious philosophers will tell you that religion starts, that the very foundational idea of religion is dividing people into clean and unclean. It starts with dividing people, that is the start of religion. Now, that's arguable, but I think it's insightful. Because I think what Jesus does in this sense is comes to kill religion. That this new covenant, in a way, is the death of that. There is no longer impure or pure. Jesus is reconciling all things together, is bringing all things together. That doesn't mean it's perfect, though. That doesn't just mean because everybody's included, everybody's all right. Because we're not. I'm not. I still have work to do. I still have to progress towards something. But it's with this sense that I've already been included, not that I have to do it in order to be included. That's why we start with our motto, right? It's belong first, then we become together. And then that leads to our belief. It informs our belief, how we express it with that. But it starts with belonging, and that does away with this separating between the clean and the unclean. It does away with the necessity of scapegoating and self-sacrificing. As a matter of fact, it makes it obsolete, and it's antithetical to the new way of living into this faith. But, like I said, bad things still happen. What do we do? Well, we practice lament. It's okay. We grieve. We still grieve. In this way, shame and guilt, in a way, become redeemed in a way. If they lead us to these practices, they don't oppress us anymore. We recognize them when they come. We listen to what they tell us. And then we practice. We practice lament and sorrow. We practice righteous anger and accountability to face injustices in the world. As recognizing the pain in the world. But it's always with an idea of keeping it in its proper place. As not something that cuts someone off or excludes someone. It's always an opportunity to bring people to repentance with that. And the big thing here is that it takes a big dose of humility to practice these things. It doesn't work without humility. The engine seizes up without the oil of humility here. This prevents us from disqualifying ourselves and disqualifying others. The sacrifice of Jesus takes all the options for self-condemnation and other condemnation off the table. And y'all, look, sometimes I feel like we're swimming so much against the tide as we try to practice this in our culture. Because if humility is the oil that keeps this engine running, othering is the fuel that keeps the old system working. Projecting guilt and shame, accepting guilt and shame, keeps people rooted in the old way of thinking with that. And again, I'm not saying guilt and shame go away. I'm just saying that we understand them totally different. They no longer have the power to cut us off or for us to cut other people off with that. And it just takes a long time to learn this. We don't get, Alex said, you know, it's not like our minds are instantly rewired. It still takes time, and it still takes us together to do this. I can't do it on my own. I can't. I'm done. Like, if I had to do this on my own, I doubt I'd even try. Because I would just say that's impossible. Even with y'all, it's a pretty dicey odds for me, like I feel at times. But without you, there's no chance for that. Grace is just incredibly disorienting. Not having an excuse to disqualify ourselves, not having a reason to disqualify others is a disorienting way to go through our world, because that's how this world works. This world works on putting people, classifying, I'm above them, oh, they're better than me, maybe I can climb that ladder. You know, it's the junior high lunch table, right? I just want to be at the right table because that one's bad and that one's too high. Like, it's just, that's the way the world works. It's ingrained and we can't escape it. And that's why this is so crucial to our development. And getting away and the decluttering is coming together. And I'm going to ask the worship team to come back up. It's not just theoretical. We need a practical experience of that. And that's why we do, the center of our worship is the communion table. Because the communion table is the ultimate representation of that grace. Everybody is welcome. Nobody's excluded. Period. There's no rank there. There's no best seat at that table. Every seat is the same. We all take it together. We all take the same way. Nobody gets privileged and nobody gets punished at the table. And y'all, we can become kind of forgetful of how important that is. But I want us to think about that today. We're going to worship and then we'll take the communion at the end like we do and we'll circle up. I want us to remember and think about the importance that this table is for everybody. This table is a sign of the new covenant. This is what Jesus said to do. Like when before the crucifixion, he said, this is the thing that's going to root you into this new reality is this table. And that's why we do it. It's a reflection of all this. So you can take that and you can think about being free from guilt. You can think about being free from shame. You can think about being free from being disqualified. You can think about free from the need to disqualify others when you take that, when we take that together. So, thank you for being here this week.
Thank you for listening to Grace Church of Northwest Arkansas podcast.
If you would like to give, you can go to gracechurchnwa.org/give.
You can find more about us online at gracechurchnwa.org. Grace and peace.